Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi everybody, welcome to today's show. It's Wild Ginger Running live broadcast here, and today we have Christian Morgan, ultra running coach and record holder for the Southwest Coast Path FKT, and also, really interestingly, he managed to beat Scott Jurek's record on the Appalachian Trail a few years ago. It's not the actual record, which I got confused about, but he beat Scott Jurek's record, which was an amazing record at the time, so that's just incredible. And he's just back from cycling across France and Spain, aren't you, Christian? So how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm good. I mean, I'm still now in Spain. The weather's nice, close to the beach, so I've been swimming every day. Yeah, it's nice. I'm really well, thank you. Yeah,
cool. So are you still actually doing the cycle ride now? You haven't finished it yet?
No, I got to my destination. Yeah, I'm just chilling out in Denia for a while. I don't know if you've heard of it, but yeah, so I'm just taking some time out and just relaxing.
Awesome. Well, yeah. I'm sure that one of the questions coming up will be what's next for you. So we'll hear about your next exciting plans. But first of all, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about how you even got into running in the first place, because obviously you're an ultra running coach now. You've achieved these amazing FKTs. How did it all start for you?
So I used to do some amateur boxing. Mm. Yeah. And so as part of the training for boxing is a little bit of running. And about that time, I saw the advertisement in my local paper where I was living at the time. I was actually born there, Wolverhampton. Mm. And this is back in 2000. And so it was for the Wolverhampton Marathon. So I thought, wow, that sounds fun. Let's do that. And that was my first marathon. And then that obviously over the 22 years progressed into the Appalachian Trail. And then there's everything in between. But it was the advertisement in the paper of a marathon, no experience, no real training, except for my boxing fitness. And that's how I got into like marathon and more and ultra running.
Wow. I feel like you skipped a big part there, just like going from a marathon to, yeah. And then I just did the 80.
Yeah. Everything in between as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a journey. It was a long journey. I think in 2015, I'd run 50 marathons.
Wow.
I guess what is the average, 3.5 a year or something. And then I saw these guys with a 100 marathon running club t-shirt on.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, I really would love to join that club. So over the remainder of 15 and 16, I ran a further 50 marathons and ultra marathons, whereas I'd done the previous in 15 years. And I joined the club at the end of 16. And it was the Wolverhampton Marathon was my 100th.
Oh,
and
brilliant.
I won it that day as well. So that was cool.
Wow.
And it was also a PB. So it was so cool to have these triple goals, on that. So it was a great, so that was the 100 Marathon Club. And it was good fun.
Oh, that's brilliant. And so you went from there. So obviously you got into running in a big way. Did you still keep up with the boxing during that? Or did the running just come to the front?
I didn't. I had one amateur fight. I lost it. I think I did. It was pretty brutal. But I lasted the rounds and stuff. And I think I just think my love was more towards the running, you know. I did the marathon, and I know boxing unearthed self-potential within me, but I think the running unearthed something extra, which the boxing didn't. So then I kind of went that running path.
Yeah, you went that way instead. Oh, that's really interesting. And I'll ask you about this when we're talking more about the FKTs, but it'd just be interesting to know, like, what part of the boxing mentality that helped you through these really epic adventures, because the AT is epic, isn't it? It's like thousands and thousands of miles. It's like over 50 days of running, like over a marathon a day. So just remind everybody that's listening. So which one did you go for first then? And was it the Southwest Coast Pass or the Appalachian Trail? Which one did you decide to go for?
So actually, my history with the Appalachian Trail started in 2018. So the current record holder is a fellow named Carol Sabe. And I met him back in 2016 in the desert doing Marathon des Sables. He told me he was going to go ahead and run the PCT. And then I found out he actually set the PCT fastest known time, wow, with which Timothy Olsen has just broken.
Oh, and that's the Pacific Coast Trail, isn't it? That's
the Pacific Crest. Pacific Crest Trail.
Okay.
Yeah. So actually, my first interest in FKTs was the Appalachian Trail. And I had like an unsuccessful attempt in 90. So I helped set the record by running with Carol, mm-hmm, for one third of his attempt. So I gained a lot of experience and then I had my own unsuccessful attempt in 19. I couldn't go there in 20 because of the pandemic. So I stayed at home in the UK and I thought, what's similar to the Appalachian Trail? And obviously it's Britain's longest national trail, you know, 630 miles along a rugged coastal trail path. So I went for that. Damien Hall was the current record holder. And I thought, yeah, I think I can beat that. I know Damien's a good runner, but I had a strong belief in myself as able to do well. And yeah, I broke the record there. So actually in 2020, the Appalachian Trail came first, and the Southwest Coast Path was almost a stepping stone for my AT adventures.
Yeah. And I see that you interview a lot of people about the Appalachian Trail, don't you? You're constantly interviewing them for your podcast, which is really, really interesting. It's such an amazing route, isn't it? I didn't really know anything about it until Nikki Kimball, she did an attempt on it, didn't she? Oh, no, that was the Long Trail.
I think she said that. I think, unless I forget, there's a documentary as well.
Yeah, she did. Sorry, that's a completely different thing. But my interest in these really, really long American trails came first from her. Then I found out about the Appalachian Trail from Scott Jurek's attempt and his book North, which is all about it. Have you ever thought about writing a book about your experiences?
Yeah, I will be writing a book. I mean, we can talk about more what I'll be doing, I guess, afterwards, but I still have some projects next year, which we can talk about, which will involve the book. So the book's not ready yet. Yeah. I have a lot of experience in my life and the material to put into the book, but next year we'll hopefully, conclude, and then I can sit down and write.
So. Amazing. Okay, right. We'll cover that at the end. So anybody, keep listening, everybody. We're going to reveal the next stage in Christian Morgan's ultra running career.
I actually have a copy of Scott.
I've
read it three. I'm on my third read now. Really good book.
It's amazing. I love how Jenny Jurek has a chapter, like every at the end of every chapter, like there's hers, because I just think it's so important to acknowledge the crew in these situations as well. I mean, you helped Carol Sabez with his, and he could not have done that without you. So you're every bit a part of that record as he is, to be honest, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I without going down a rabbit hole, just to add to that, definitely, because one of the things that builds my confidence and my self-esteem is Carol has the record, but I'm the person who spent the most time with Carol during that record. So I have the most insight, you know, so that we really bonded. It was a great experience.
Yeah, you're like his wingman, his running wingman. I've noticed you've done something to your finger. What have you done to your finger?
I actually fractured this in Maine on the Appalachian Trail.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I fell and I fractured it. And because I still had to go through Maine and go through Mahoosuc Notch, I had to, like, there's an area where you almost have to climb over boulders. It's called Mahoosuc Notch. It's the toughest mile on the Appalachian Trail. So I couldn't do anything about my finger until I got back. And then they taped it up at the hospital. I saw the fracture. And I just, it was really limited, you know, like I couldn't do anything. So I took off the binding of the two fingers, and then I saw some sense and I just bought this. So this will help it heal.
Yeah, just heal it in the right direction at least.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that's really good to know that you're getting that sorted. So I've got loads of questions from our listeners here today. I want to start with one from Conleth Berry, who is one of my patrons. Basically, if you're a patron of Wild Ginger Running, you get to ask all these amazing experts on my channel all the questions that you want. So the first one is from patron Conleth, and he says, my question is why, in big capital letters with two exclamation marks. I'm always curious about the mindset and the mind games of top class runners. These feats of endurance, like the AT and the Southwest Coast Path, are not easy, but I understand for some it's just business, like as a coach and author competitor, but I'm curious about how and why they push themselves that hard. So yeah, why the AT and why the Southwest Coast Path?
I think you enter the unknown, like, I mean, mentally and physically, and it's an adventure, you know. I mean, the Appalachian Trail, FKTs, the Southwest Coast Path are a vehicle to take me to what I've never experienced before in my life. And that's the unknown. And it appeals to me. It really does. Like, everyone can live a life where they have a routine or they have a schedule and, you know, they go on holiday, they know what to expect but I really like to enter the unknown world physically and mentally, and by using these adventures as vehicles, like I'm able to enter this area. And so I use ultra running almost as a vehicle to explore my mental and physical capabilities. Mm-hmm. It's a personal thing, and that's me. I mean, everyone has their own reasons, I guess.
Gotta have a hobby.
Yeah, that's my hobby. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. So just for people who don't know just how far the Appalachian Trail is and the sheer magnitude of the task, can you just tell us a little bit about how far it is, the terrain, and like how many miles per day that you have to do to get anywhere near the record?
Yeah, so so the length of the Appalachian Trail is 2,194 miles.
Wow.
The record, yeah, that's a long way. It's a 2,000-mile ultra run, you know?
Wow.
Then you need to take into account the elevation. And the elevation is, I think, 465,000 feet.
Wow.
1,000 feet. Half a million feet.
Gosh.
Of elevation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which boils down to, if you're going to have a go at the record, like you're averaging, so the record is 53 and a half miles a day, or 53 miles a day. That's what Carol ran.
Yeah.
And that's his average.
Wow.
And he also averaged about 11,600 feet or 4,000 meters a day.
Wow. How many days?
In elevation.
Is it?
Yeah, 40. His record is 41 days, 7 hours, and 39 minutes. Yeah.
Wow, 41 days. So 41 days of doing over 50 miles a day with tons of ascent.
Yeah. And then you said the terrain. What's the terrain like?
Yeah.
So you're in between, because you're traveling through 14 American states, and you're going from the south right the way up to the north. Accents change, cultures change, weather changes, and terrain changes as well. So it can be a beautiful groomed pine needle trail where you can look ahead and not look down. And then, for example, Maine is just in between trees, the trail is, and those roots of the trees obviously form the trail. So it's just roots, tree roots. I mean, it's hard to hike it, and it breaks a lot of hikers.
Yeah.
So it has extreme terrain changes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, it sounds incredible. It sounds like an amazing, amazing journey, and one that you'd want to savor, like, rather than trying to run really fast. But there must be a certain beauty in pushing yourself as far as you can on it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I try to look at the trail from all aspects. So as you said, I did my interviews, you know, with through hikers, record setters, people who are artists of the Appalachian Trail. I hiked myself last year 500 miles. I hiked as well, you're not a through hiker unless you hike the whole thing, but I joined the through hiker for the remaining 500 miles.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I do savor it, you know, for sure.
Yeah.
But that was business. That was like, okay, I really want to have a look at this record and see if I can do it. So that's kind of a different thing.
Yeah. Do you think that you want to try and beat Carol's record in the future, or is your love affair with the AT kind of drawing to a conclusion? Is there other things that you'd want to do differently, or are you still really fixated on the goal of the AT?
There's loads of things I want to do. Like, I want to write a book, you know, about all these experiences. But yeah, so you've alluded to, and yes, next year I'm going to go back to the Appalachian Trail.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm going to go back. There's at the moment, there's like Carl Meltzer. Do you know who Carl Meltzer is?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I met him at the Coastal Challenge in Costa Rica. So yeah, he's a great bloke.
So
yeah.
If we can get the funding, Carl's interested in crewing me for this.
Cool.
Yeah, along with, do you know who Bells is? Did you ever watch that Made to Be Broken Red Bull documentary about Carl Meltzer?
Yes, I think I did. And is he like a crazy guy?
He's the guy with the big black beard, and he's kind of just bringing the energy, and he's fun.
Like,
and
he's a bit mad, but like everyone, he's just brilliant.
Yeah. So Carl Meltzer and Bells, like I said, if the funding's there, we're speaking with potential sponsors for this, are interested in, but it'll be a southbound attempt.
Okay.
I won't be going north. It'll be south.
Oh, okay.
So I'll start at Katahdin and I'll go south.
Yeah, and it's all downhill if you go south, isn't it?
All the way to Springer.
Yeah. So that brings us on really nicely to the next question that I've got, because you must be training quite hard for this now. Like, when would you do an attempt? Would it be in the spring, summer kind of time?
I would aim, if I do it without Carl Meltzer, I start June 1st. And if I do it with Carl, he has his speed goat race at the end of July. So I'd start in early August.
Okay.
So training hasn't started yet. Okay. I'm still in recovery mode.
Okay.
Right now.
Still in recovery, still having cycled a long way. Cycling's good recovery anyway, isn't it?
Cycling was recovery, yeah.
Yeah. So Andrew's got a great question here. He said, what did the training look like before attempting something like that? So he's got three questions, but we'll start with that one.
Yeah, training, I got to say, you know, it's 22 years of endurance, you know. That's what brought me to this stage. But if you're talking about specific training for the Appalachian Trail, I was living in Thailand this year. Mm. And because I do my online coaching, you know, so I can live in beautiful places.
Wow.
And it's fun. And I was up north Thailand in the mountains. You know, I'm eating beautiful tropical food. So I'm putting good nutrition into my body. And then I'd like go out into the mountains with a bag full of rice. Like, you get these like little rice things rolled up in banana leaf, and you can get different like black bean rice and so on. And so I would take a bag of rice with me, just head off into the mountains. And I think I would do my biggest days were like maybe a 6 hour run or an 8 hour run, two of them back to back. You know, six-hour, eight-hour runs back-to-back in the mountains. And the mountains there are really rugged. So, you know, you're gaining a lot of elevation, and it's kind of similar to the Appalachian Trail. So specifically this year, my training was in the mountains in North Thailand, eating really good food, and then also taking good time to embrace the recovery. So a lot of massage, because it was affordable.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, massage over there for me was £5 for an hour and a half.
Oh, lovely. I love a Thai massage. They bend you in all sorts of funny directions, don't they? I had one once.
Yeah, and just remember, just to say bow bow, it means softly, softly. Otherwise, you're going to be in some serious
They're
pain.
gonna stand on you.
They do stand on you, yeah.
Yeah. And
So,
so do you take like a track of your like weekly mileage or your weekly vert or some or anything like
totally.
that?
It's all on Strava. So
Yeah.
this year I've gained I think almost 1 million feet elevation. And I've run 3,500 miles, and I've
Wow.
typically for the past so 6 years I've run an average of 3 to 3,500 miles each year,
Wow.
yeah. And the elevation has been probably from 2018 onwards,
Wow. So you can't, I wouldn't say that you could do like a proper like 9 till 6 desk job and complete something like this. Like you have to devote your life to running, don't you? To your running comes first and then your job fits around the running. Like, would you say that's true of this type of adventure? Because
Yeah,
I don't,
running comes first, and my job is running as well. So, with the online coaching, so it really fits together really nicely for me.
Yeah, you
It
could be
works well.
thinking about like, oh, what shall I say to that client? Like you could be thinking all of that, like make some voice notes in your phone as you go, like, oh yeah, I should say this to them, this is what they need, then come back and just write them an email and do the training plans.
I had a French coaching client who just finished his first 100 miler UTMB in Nice, France.
Wow.
So congratulations to him, Olivier. And he asked me one day a question, and I was just actually on the trail experiencing what he was asking. So it was really cool because I was
Yeah.
like, okay, so earlier I explained and I shared my experience with him. So it's good to not just teach from a book or like theory. It's good to teach from experience. So yeah, but I think having a full-time job would be tough. You'd have to either get up really early or just use the weekends.
Yeah. Like I mean like with I'm not saying you don't work full time, but I mean like a one of those jobs where you have to sit at a certain place, go to a certain place from certain hours. Like it seems like you need a flexible job. So that sounds like great for you.
But I also think where there's a will, there's a way. And if someone run commutes to work and run commutes home, and then on the weekend does some long runs. Yeah, I think it would be possible. Yeah, I think it's possible for anyone. Where if you want something and you desire it enough in life, you'll find a way. And in fact, when I was on the Appalachian Trail, where there is a will, there is a way. And at times I lost my will, and that's a really tough place to be. I mean, Scott Jurek talks about it. And when you lose your will, it almost feels like depression. Like that, what can you do? How can you achieve this? But then the will comes back, and so it's, yeah, keeping on, holding on to my will during the AT was really tough, you know.
Push you to the limits of your mental abilities, and that's what you were there to do as well. And
That's what I was there to
yeah,
do,
and
the unknown,
it's really interesting that you've started talking about that we've naturally led onto this, because actually Andrew's next question was, were there many days where like due to a niggle or an injury that you couldn't do as many miles as you needed, and then like did you have to make them up the following days? So I suppose the same goes for the like lack of mojo as well.
No, like, yeah, sure, 100%. So coming down into Damascus, which is where Virginia ends and Tennessee starts, it's a great trail town for the Appalachian Trail. They have trail days there once a year. It's a big party, big festival. And so coming into Damascus, you also have a long, long, long deep decline of elevation. So you're running downhill for what felt like 3 hours or
Wow.
something, and my quad started to get a little bit warm on the left side. And by the time I was at the bottom, I could feel it had really heated up. So I took some ice. And then, so for the following 2 days, I had to make a mental decision. I was like, well, Scott Jurek got through a quad injury. And if he can do it, I can do it. So it is possible. So I took inspiration from Scott. And I thought, okay, he hiked. Let's hike. Let's see what happens. So for the following 2 days, I hiked 100 miles
Wow.
with the elevation 24,000 feet. And yeah, I was ahead of record by, I think it was either 8 or 12 miles by then. And then I came back down to on par with the record after my quad healed and I was able to start running again.
Wow, it's amazing that your quad healed whilst you were still in action.
I know.
Most people take a few days off, but you can't really afford to if you're going for the record, can you?
No, I mean, if you come off the trail, it's over. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and Andrew's final question here is that what did you do at the end of each day of running on the 80 to recover for the next day of running? Like, was there certain foods that you ate? Did you have did you take a Thai person with you to massage you?
I wish.
You should have had a Thai massage
guy is a guy called Litz, and he works in this temple. It's a beautiful setting.
Wow, you should have brought him for crewing.
I wish I could have, but that may have been complicated. So I relied on, so when I got in, obviously you want your hot meal prepared by the crew. I have two crew, Gun Section and Iceman, and these are my guys with a car each, and they have trail names because that's what you do on the Appalachian Trail. By the way, my trail name was Captain.
Captain Morgan.
Yeah, Captain Morgan, cool. But shortened to Captain. It was pretty, because the drink, Captain Morgan?
Yeah. Did you drink a lot during the trail?
I didn't drink that. No. I had one beer on the 80. To answer the question though, that recovery was the meal, the hot meal, sit down, wash my feet. The feet needed to be washed, and the crew usually did that. Gun Section did that. And then go to bed. I mean, that was it. That's all I had time for. Sat down, eat while my feet were being washed, and go to bed. The sleep is your ultimate recovery. Yeah. So that was it. Sometimes there was a little bit of massage on the feet because the feet became really sore. And I use CBD oil from, have like a sponsor, Bud and Tender, from the UK. And I had like a drop of CBD oil. I had a rooftop tent that I slept in. So I had a really nice area. And sleep. Yeah. Sleep was the big recovery for me.
Yeah.
Efficiency.
Yeah. And the CBD oil, you have a drop, you ingest that. It's not like for massage on the feet.
No, I just put it under my tongue and just go to sleep with this taste, and then eventually you can't help but like swallow. We do it every minute, but you try and leave it for 90 seconds, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I felt tired anyway, so I'm gonna sleep. But I don't know, it kind of works for me. So yeah. I like it.
Do you take, because I've got some in a drawer, and I got sent it while I was pregnant, so I was like, possibly shouldn't like try anything new at this point. But I've just remembered that it's still there in the drawer, and I was just wondering, do you still take it? Like, do you take it every day? Do you think it helps? CBD
I had my bottle, I just finished it the other day. So I was taking it while I was cycling. It lasted after a little bit, the 80, but I've run out now. So there's no kind of THC in there, so there's no fuzzy brain or getting high or anything like that. I think it just helps relax you, but I've run out now, so I don't have any. I'll have to censor for some more.
It'd just be interesting because there's not loads of studies done into the CBD oil yet, is there? But there's lots of, supposed to be really good for sports people.
Yeah, that's what they say. So yeah, I thought I'd try it. And it didn't have any adverse effects, so it didn't bother me.
That's cool. And then I just wanted to ask you a few questions about how you felt on the finish of the Appalachian Trail. Like, what went through your mind as you knew that you'd beaten Scott Jurek's record, which is obviously like quite a big deal because he's a really, really famous athlete, isn't he? Legendary. Yeah. How did that make you feel?
Well, like, we were going up Katahdin. There was three of us. There was Fishboy, who was one of my he joined the crew later on. He's the son of Maniac, who also went after the record in 1991 against David Horton. He was a hiker. David Horton was a runner. So anyway, also David Horton actually joins me as well. I don't know if you know who David is, but David Horton's pretty much one of the greatest American ultra runners. He's 72 years old.
Wow.
And he came up Katahdin with me, and he was telling me about when he was with Scott Jurek and Speed Goat, because he was involved. And he also held the record on the Appalachian Trail himself and the Pacific Crest Trail. So for me, it was a shared experience. I didn't really feel it was so much about me. Cool. I slowed down significantly because he's 72. And I thought, okay, so I'm going to be the second fastest in the world. I'm 2 days ahead of Scott Jurek. I don't mind if I slow down for a couple of hours now. And let's just savor this time with Fishboy and David Horton and just kind of talk to the hikers. So it became more about us than me, I think, at that point. But there was a little part of me that kind of, so my time was 44 days, 4 hours. And I think, oh, I forget. That's embarrassing. 44 days, 4 hours.
Four
I think
minutes.
54 minutes.
All the
so
fours,
if I would have
really?
Got up there 10 minutes faster, it would have been 44 days, 4 hours and 44 minutes.
Oh, you should have been so like, oh, bye, of, David. Sorry. I'll come
David,
back
for
you.
Yeah. And I did kind of wish, actually, at some point, I just had some time to reflect by myself. And because at that point I was the second fastest in the world, I thought, Christian, you learn by your experiences. And if you, like, when you come back next year, that's because I thought maybe if I come back next year, then I can take that time for myself and just maybe sit for an hour or two and just reflect and kind of soak up what just happened, you know? So it was a wonderful time, yeah. Shared experience.
It sounds amazing. And I seen there's a notice board, isn't there, at Katahdin, as like a wooden board. And you
That's
see
it.
Pictures of people at the end and like sometimes there's crowds there. And it's just it's a really iconic picture. I'm intrigued. Does David Horton have a trail name then for the AT? Because everybody else is like Fishboy, Beniac, Gunslinger, Captain.
Well, Gun section.
Gun section.
Well, everyone says that, gun section.
Gun section. Okay, I'm going to write that down in case, but I need to talk about that again. But do you know what David Horton's name was, or is he just too legendary to even have a trail name?
Yeah, I think it was the runner. Actually.
The runner. Oh,
yeah.
Because he was like one of the first people that were actually running rather than hiking the AT.
Yeah, correct. He was the first guy to go and run the Appalachian Trail. I think it was 50. He did it 51 days or something.
Wow. So. It's just incredible. And then the time's just been like knocked down. And Carol doing it in 41 days is just incredible. And so is he going to come and help you on your southbound attempt then?
David or Carol?
Carol as well. Like, will he be part of the team, do you think? As well as
Carol's pretty busy, you know, like we were close on the Appalachian Trail. He came out to London he was visiting London and he contacted me and we went for a run together. But we haven't had a whole lot of interaction really. And I think when I first announced to him at the start of 2019, I'd be going for my own attempt against the record. He said, I really wish you a wonderful summer. But I won't be able to help because I've got other obligations. So it's never really been in my mind to ask Carol for his level of support that I gave him.
Yeah.
I've kind of looked more towards other people in the community in America because he lives in Belgium.
Oh, you know? So, yeah. So yeah, a major undertaking.
But just to speak for Carol's, his great characteristic is that when I was on the Appalachian Trail, I think 41 days and 7 hours arrived while I was out there, and that was his record time.
Wow.
And I left him a voice message and I congratulated him and I said, listen, it was amazing being part of your journey. And he sent me such a long message back. And I still have that. And, you know, it just meant so much to me that he was on board with me. I'm sure he was pleased I didn't break his record, but he knows it's going to go down one day.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just felt a lot to me. I felt a great connection there. But as for asking Carol to come out, he's got a lot to do. You know, I have my paces and my own people.
Yeah, your own crew. Yeah. There is a bit of a tradition, isn't there, of people who have broken the record, like either popping in to say hi and do the last bit with people or just helping the whole crew. Because Scott, I'm sure Scott helped out with the next person. I'm sure Carl helped Scott and then Scott helped Carl break it the next year.
That's it. David Horton was there for both those guys' attempts. You know, it's like an AT family.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. And I think just like Carol's all the way in Belgium, I'm sure if he was in America, he would have popped onto the trail. Run a couple of miles. I mean, and the cool thing was actually the trail passes the backyard or the yard of Andrew Thompson. Now, Andrew Thompson is the guy who went to break David Horton's record.
Ah.
And his trail name is either AT or Trail Dog.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I, you know, it was cool because last year when I was hiking, I went again because I hiked past his house. I went in and we drank beers all night, hung out. I mean, yeah. And he was an AT record holder. He did set the record eventually. I think Jen Farr Davis broke Andrew Thompson's record. So that, you know, there's this kind of like this group of people who have done it. And it feels pretty sweet to be part of that group,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, it's really cool. I'm just thinking, just like all these people, they're all guys. I'm just wondering if you know anything about the women's record on the AT. Yeah. Like, is there many women?
I just mentioned her, Jen Farr Davis.
Oh, that's so Jen Farr. Oh, I thought you said Glenn.
Jennifer broke Andrew Thompson's record. And she only hiked. She was a hiker.
Wow, cool.
Whereas Andrew was a runner. And her record stands today.
Oh, brilliant.
I believe it's many years old. It's, I think, a decade old or more. I forget.
Yeah.
On my website, I've got this page called Appalachian Trail and all the record holders. I've put them all up there and she's on there.
Oh, brilliant. So it's kind of time for the ladies to try again at the AT, because it sounds like that record of 10 years old or something like that would be right for the taking.
They're trying.
Yeah.
I mean, Liz Anjos, tried in 2020. And she was unsuccessful, you know. She didn't achieve what she did, but she finished the trail.
Yeah.
And she was crewed by someone called Warren Doyle, who's... So, yeah, I mean, also, just a quick side note, back to my preparation for the Appalachian Trail. I went to Warren Doyle's Appalachian Trail Folk School, mm-hmm. and I learned all about the psychological aspects of the... and the emotional aspects of the Appalachian Trail, mm-hmm. less the physical.
Oh, right.
So I was educated that way as well.
So just tell us a bit Warren more Doyle, about that.
Warren crewed Liz Anjos in 2019. And when they fell off pace, they had to readjust and think, well, what can we shoot for? So she shoots to beat David Horton's record.
Oh,
so
she, cool.
51 days.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I think still very impressive. Point. Just to complete it is really impressive.
The hike to hike it, you know, if you finish the AT and you're a through hiker and it takes you 364 days, that's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So people can be on that trail for a year, can they?
I think a through hike is to finish it in one calendar year.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't think there's any through hikers to do that long, because Katahdin gets snowfall and it closes at a certain time of year. Maybe it's October or September.
Yeah.
I forget.
So you'd want to do like 20, 30 miles a day. That's a lot, isn't it? And if you're hiking, you're presumably carrying loads more as well, so that makes it even harder.
Yeah, no crew for the hikers.
Yeah, taking tent, food, refilling various places.
Yeah.
Gosh, it does. Like, I've watched that film Wild, where she hikes the PCT.
Yeah.
And that just looked amazing. But I just thought, oh, that would be amazing. But then I thought, I'd probably get a bit bored of walking after about 2 weeks.
Again, I think that's the journey that I said what invites me to the trail is the unknown. So these guys, you know, last year I was with these guys, the through hikers. I went all the way from the end of New Hampshire, I believe it was. No, the start of New Hampshire, a town called Hanover. In fact, Bill Bryson, who wrote A Walk in the Woods, lived in New Hampshire.
Oh.
So it's a great college town. And I started there and I hiked with the through hikers and I became part of this group called the Dirty Bubble. And we all got COVID. So it was really, you know, it was cool. It was in the 100-mile wilderness. Like there's this thing called in Maine, the 100-mile wilderness, where there's no road crossings.
Wow.
So you have to carry supplies it usually takes hikers about 7 to 9 days to get through there. So yeah, I mean, your pack at that point is heavy.
Yeah.
But these through hikers who I was spending time with, I got to absorb their experiences. And they're definitely, you've got to push through the mundane.
Mm.
You really do.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe a solar panel and an iPod on shuffle.
Yeah. 1,000 audiobooks.
Yeah. 1,000 audiobooks.
But your podcast.
My podcast. Listening to Christine Morgan on the podcast. But tell us a bit more about the school for the psychology. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. The Appalachian Trail Folk School was founded by Warren Doyle. And Warren Doyle is a 72-year-old man who lives in Tennessee, and he's hiked the Appalachian Trail and sectioned hiked the Appalachian Trail 18 times.
Wow.
So that's more than anyone else currently in history.
Wow.
So he knows more about the trail than anyone else in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a 5-day course, I'd just done a training week with Iceman and Warren. Warren crewed me for a week, as did Iceman. Mm-hmm. And we pushed out, I don't know, I forget the distance, but we pushed out the same distance Carol did in 1 week, wow. Carol Sabay, to give me the confidence. And then after that, he said, hey, do you want to just come? I've got a folk school on now. It's 5 days. So I hung out with the potential through hikers for 5 days. And Warren speaks about everything to do with what's going to happen in your mind. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't so much go. He doesn't even talk about equipment. He's pretty old school. But every kind of emotional road crossing you're going to get to, he kind of talks about his own experiences and how to overcome that and so on. So that for me was interesting and educational. And I like Warren as well. Yeah. I'm close with him. So it really worked well for me as a student.
And so what takeaways did you get from that? Like, did you use any of it on your attempt? Well, your best achievement?
Yeah. I see everything that I study about the Appalachian Trail as something which will help me get to the finish in the fastest time that I can. And I mean, there were many things, you know, if I could pick like one thing, it'd be hard. I'd have to think. I mean, Warren talks so much for hours and hours every day and you're absorbing all this. So to pick one thing out is kind of tough. It's eluding me at the moment. But I think overall, just to listen to someone speak who is a folk legend, mm-hmm. but living folk legend, and be in his presence, and I absorbed his stories and attentively listened to him, I think helped me on the Appalachian Trail. So it's not a piece of advice, but it was just soaking up Warren Doyle's knowledge in that way.
Like a little part of him was then in you and on the trail and experiencing the trail.
Forever.
That's a really nice way of thinking about it. Well, back to the practical now, because we've got another question here. We've got some training questions here, just like general training questions now, which are probably applicable to the AT, but also just in general long distance running and ultras. Dave Pollard, he would like to know, like, do you use anything to stop chafing, or can you recommend anything that anybody has told you about to stop chafing happening? Because he gets chafing on his thighs, I think.
In between his thighs?
Yeah.
So you need material between the thighs. And also, if you're a male runner, it's probably best to wear some kind of underwear. So I reached out to a company called Runderwear, and I think they're a UK-based company.
Yeah.
And they supplied me some Runderwear for my attempts on the Appalachian Trail.
Awesome.
And so that just kept everything in place when you're running as a male. I mean, women wear sports bras, you know, and so on. So men wear some underwear, it helps. And then I think if it depends on if it's raining, then you probably want to wear some kind of bicycle shorts. Mm-hmm. So you don't have loose material.
Yeah.
But then if it's dry and the material's kind of dry and it still sits in between your thighs where your thighs touch, the underwear holding everything in place, and then the shorts just being in between the thighs. I think the thighs will only, skin only chafes when it's against itself. Mm-hmm. So if you can put a layer in between the chafing, then I think that will actually prevent it.
Yeah.
So I don't like this approach of putting some kind of nut butter on or something, or some kind of lubricant, because that's not preventing the problem. That's kind of trying to ease the problem. But I think if you try to prevent the chafing, I think that's the better route.
Yeah.
As a coach, that's what I would, you know, tell my clients.
Yeah, I pointed him in the direction of those shorts you can get, which are like cycling shorts, but then like a short around them. Like, I think they call them twin shorts.
Twin shorts, yeah.
I'm actually wearing a pair just now. Yeah, they're really good.
Great thing for you.
Yeah. And then Dave wants to know how you manage to fit in training runs and actual runs around family life, because he feels guilty going for a long run on a Sunday. So I'm guessing he's got kids and a wife or a partner. What would your advice be on that?
Well, I mean, I don't have, like, I'm not married and I don't have children, you know. So it's hard for me to actually speak to that. But if I could give some kind of advice, I would say allowing your partner to have time for themselves is really important for a healthy relationship. And I think if both partners have carved out some time for themselves, you know, then it depends what they want to choose to do within that time. Maybe that could be, who asked the question? Did you say his name is?
Dave
may find that if him and his wife both carve out some time for themselves, he can then fill that time with things that he wants to do. And I think that's important in a healthy relationship. And also, I think it's great for the children, because a lot of these ultra running families have children, and then the children grow up in this they probably spend more time with nature. They're probably outdoors more. They probably see their parents more happy. So I think that would be my advice as a non-parent, but I mean, that's the best I can do.
No, I think that's really great advice. I think if you're both having your time, then you won't feel guilty, because it's a lot, it's kind of like scheduled then, isn't it? So I think that's a really great answer.
Yeah, it can't be one-sided. You might, if you want to go out for a two-hour training run on a Sunday, I think at some point you need to give back and say, hey, why don't you go and take 2 hours and spend it with your friends and do what you want to do, or whatever.
Yeah,
I think you need that balance.
Yeah, exactly. That's a really great answer, especially as it doesn't apply to you. So that's really good. Very thoughtful. And then Tina Benton has a great question here. She wants to know about preparing for her first 100 miler, mentally and physically, because she wants to do one next year. She says she's done a few 50s, but she says the jump from the 50 to the 100 just seems really huge. What advice would you give to Tina for her first 100 miler?
Okay, so I think it's important to take advice from people who have achieved what you want to achieve. So if you take any, if you read any literature, or if you watch any podcast or YouTube, or take advice from a person, just make sure that that person has achieved what you want to achieve, because they'll be experienced and qualified to give you that advice. So first of all, just make sure your advice is coming from a good source. And then the jump from 50, did you say 50 miles to 100 miles?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there is the 100K distance. But me, I actually went from 50 to 100. Mm-hmm. And so it depends on a lot of things. Like there's 100 milers on a track, which take 10 hours for the faster guys. And then there's 100 miles in the mountain that take 20 hours for the fastest guys. So it depends what the type of runner, 100 mile is. Mm-hmm. Then what I would say is make sure your training leading up to the 100 mile distance is specific to that terrain and that environment. Mm-hmm. So you're replicating what you're going to experience. And then just be prepared that it's the unknown.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to figure it out. But when you're out there during in the 100 mile and you're at mile 70, that's when you're going to start to figure things out. So have confidence in yourself as well.
What about if it really hurts? Like, you must have experienced a lot of kind of
pain management.
Pains. Yeah. What's your pain management strategy?
Yeah. So adjust. I think that's the best advice. So on the Appalachian Trail, as I said, I was coming into Damascus. I realized I couldn't run anymore, but I could hike. So I hiked, and 2 days later, the pain went away. With a 100 miler, you may have a pain that lasts maybe not 2 days, you know, but you may have something that lasts a bit less.
Yeah.
But just adjust,
yeah.
You know, make an adjustment. I mean, adjust and move forward.
And maybe poles, like if you're going to be hiking, like maybe poles is a good idea.
If it's mountainous, I believe, because the poles are good for going up and going down. And then if it's flat, it's fun to get into the rhythm with poles. So it doesn't need to be mountainous, I guess. Poles are just fun because you can break out the poles and say, okay, I'm going to hike for a bit. So that's another good way to do it as well.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, well, good luck, Tina, with your 100 miler. I'm sure that you'll do really well. But also, I just suddenly thought, it is a big jump, isn't it, 50 to 100 miles? But 100K is only like 65 miles. So maybe like a person could enter a 100 miler thinking, right, well, ideally I get to the end. But if I get to 80 miles and DNF, then that's still a great achievement. And then the following 100 miler, you could get to the 100 miler. So I would say maybe don't be scared of a DNF, just see how you go. Like, what do you think about that kind of attitude?
It's called trial and error, and it's proven throughout history as humankind on the planet that that's probably one of the best approaches, you know, trial and error. And then you make a, you know, an adjustment and you change what the error was and you improve and you don't have those problems again. Yeah, that's great advice, actually.
Yeah, so just suck it and see.
See what happens. Don't be afraid to DNF.
Yeah. Awesome. Oh, thanks very much, Christian. That's great. And we just got a final question. I think we've got time for one final question from Scott. So he wants a bit of advice on speed, which sounds like just up your street. So he's just done the London Marathon, virtual London Marathon, which he did in just under 7 hours, and because it was a bit hard to run it alone. But he's been having his best. He's 51 years old now, and he's just been having his best 10k times for a few years. So he used to do like an hour and 15, hour and 20, but now he's back to an hour for his 10k times. He says, "I'm not overly worried about times. I love running, but I am intrigued as to why over the longer distances, I just don't seem to have any ability to get close to friends and club members who are in my age range." So for example, he just got under 7 hours for the London Marathon yesterday. So he's doing like an hour for 10K. So 7 hours for the marathon does seem like a bit of a discrepancy between those times. This is part of a longer email. But he said he does good sleep, good nutrition. He does a lot of gardening. He does some speed work as well. And so he's just wondering what it is. I've suggested that maybe he would try like a personal coach, like I suggested you. And there's various other people that he could obviously choose from, but yeah, what kind of thing would you recommend? Do you get this a lot from people that are okay at 10k and then just longer distances take them forever? Do you have any
it sounds like quite a unique case, actually. I think you need to be brutally honest with yourself and reassess everything. Mm-hmm. You know, because there's a problem somewhere. And what it is, it's all about solving that problem. And sometimes you need to go back to what you think is okay and reassess it to maybe have a different take on it and say, actually, maybe what I thought was okay is the actual problem. So maybe take a whole reassess everything once again, either alone or with a coach or with a loved one or something, maybe someone who's willing to listen. And then if you can't unearth what the problem is, then it's time to maybe try some new things that you haven't tried before. So I would take that approach. I would reassess everything. I don't want to go into specifics exactly because there's so many things to do to get faster, but I'm trying to look at the bigger picture. And then once you've reassessed, hopefully he's found his problem. And then if not, then start trying some new approaches. And hopefully with those new approaches, he'll get results.
Yeah.
But there's a saying by Einstein, I think it's, you can't solve the problem with the same mind that made it.
Yeah. If you keep doing the same thing and expecting difference, then that's the definition of insanity.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
Personally think he would benefit from a bit of personal coaching because it sounds like he's exhausted his resources and his knowledge base. But I think that he could really benefit from somebody else coming in and going, right, let's try this type of training, do that, see how that goes. And because coaches have like, you'll have like the latest scientific knowledge, you have all your experience of tons of other clients. So yeah, I just think a coach would be the way forward for Scott.
Okay. Good luck, Scott.
Yeah. Awesome. Oh, well, it's been great chatting to you today, Christian. So if anybody wants to find out more about you and your podcast on the Appalachian Trail and your coaching, where should they direct themselves and where can they follow you?
Yeah, go to my website. It has all my social media. It has my email. It has my telephone number. It has all my podcasts. I mean, I've created a website that contains everything. So if you go there, then you find all my social media. And it's my name, which is spelled with a K, Christian. And then the word ultra without any hyphens or dots. So it's just christianultra.com. I had to think for a second. I was going to say gmail.com, but that's not my website. Yeah, so my website's christianultra.com. And there you can find out more about what we've talked about. You can actually listen to podcasts with David Horton Scott Maniac, you know, like these legends and stuff. And then you can find out about me as well and reach out to me.
Awesome. I've put a link in the film description or the podcast show notes below as well. So you should be able to really easily find out more about Christian. And do you do a lot on social media? So should people follow you on like Instagram or something to keep up with what you're doing?
Yeah, sure. It's I got pulled up for this the other month and they're like, you don't even know your own Instagram. It used to be Christian Ultra, you know, because that was easy because everything's Christian Ultra, Twitter, Facebook and website and stuff, email. But then I changed it to like, I believe it's Online Running Coach.
Okay.
Yeah. Or no, it's Ultra Running Coach.
Ultra
sorry.
Running Coach on Instagram.
Yeah, on Instagram. Okay. Yeah, you can follow me there. And I mean,
yeah,
we haven't really spoke about it, but I just cycled 1,000 miles and finished about a week or so ago across France and Spain. And every single day I sat down in my tent and I wrote an account of my experiences.
Cool.
So there's a lot on Instagram's my main one.
Yeah. Okay. So follow you on Instagram. And just quickly before you go, just remind us what you're going to be doing this coming year. So either June or August, perhaps, for that Southbound AT.
Yeah. I'll be going after the overall record, Southbound on the Appalachian Trail. I have three goals. My A goal is the first person in history to break 40 days.
Wow.
Yeah, because the record's 41 days and 7 hours.
Wow.
And that's quite close, I believe, in the percentage to 40 days. So that's my A goal, is to be the first person, because someone will do it. And I would like to be the Roger Bannister of the Appalachian Trail.
Wow.
My second goal is to break the current record, 41 days, 7 hours, mm-hmm. belonging to my friend Carol. Mm-hmm. And then my third goal is to set a new Southbound record, which is held by Carl Meltzer,
wow.
Speed Goat, currently. And to do that, I have to run almost about 2 days slower than I did this year. So I believe that this is within reach for me.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what my next year's project is.
Okay. So the record that Carol has, is that a northbound one?
That's a northbound record.
So you're
yeah.
going to go for
but
a
it's
northbound
also the, it's
and a
also
southbound.
The overall. It's also the overall.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you get the fastest time on the AT, north or south,
okay,
that's the fastest time.
Okay.
But if you're the second, I mean, Carl Meltzer is the southbound record holder. Mm-hmm. So there is a north and a south as well.
Yeah. Is it easier to do one way than the other then? Or is it just completely like, yeah, it's the same?
Well, I mean, I think Scott Jurek was on the trail last year when I was, and he went for a southbound record supported by Carl Meltzer. Mm. And he pulled off trail after 6 days, unfortunately, with a quad injury. Him and Jenny, it was heartbreaking, really, because, you know, they went out there and it was very short-lived. But the idea was he took on Carl's experience, Carl Meltzer's experience, that by going south, you cover the toughest states of Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine. And by going south, you do those first.
Yeah.
So the idea is when you're arriving on really tired legs, but that's kind of, you know, 1,800 miles behind you, and then you're in Tennessee and Georgia, maybe the trail's a little bit easier, like polite to you. Not polite.
I know what you mean.
So I would say strategically, the guys going south think that's the way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, well, this is amazing. We'll all be following you now. We're all going to follow you on Instagram. And we wish you the best of luck for breaking the records and all your three goals for 2023.
Claire, I just want to thank you. It's been so nice. We met in person a couple of years ago at Druids 2017.
Oh, did we?
I was there that year. You interviewed me.
Oh, did I? Oh, sorry. I interview so many people. I completely.
I know. Yeah. But it was just nice to catch up with you again. I really appreciate your time and all the listeners out there. Thanks for watching as well.
Oh, thank you. You've been a really great guest, Christian. It's been absolutely a pleasure to chat to you. And we wish you all the best on the AT in 2023.
Thank you.
Cool. Thank you, everybody. And I'll see you soon. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.